Looks like we have a good number present this morning. We appreciate the presence of everyone. For those who may be visiting, we invite you to come back and be with us again. Come back for our study this evening at 5:30. We'll begin a study of 1 John by looking at 1 John chapter 1 this evening. Short chapter, but full of information. We'll give some introductions to the epistle of 1 John and set the pace for the rest of the book. So come back and be a part of that study this evening. A very common sin that is very seldom acknowledged is the sin of bitterness. I don't mean by that that no one ever acknowledges that sin or even publicly confesses that sin, but it is a sin that is seldom acknowledged. Meaning by that, you probably can't remember the time that someone either publicly or came up to you and talked about their shortcomings and they said, you know what, I really have a problem with bitterness. My heart's just full of bitterness. I'm struggling with bitterness. Kind of like covetousness. People are guilty of covetousness, but few people ever acknowledge covetousness. It's common, but seldom acknowledged. Which suggests to us that a person who may otherwise be doctrinally sound, faithful in attendance, knowledgeable in the Word and active in the church, could be guilty of the sin of bitterness. Now the Bible addresses the problem of bitterness. It must be a real problem. The Bible addresses it. Let's look at Ephesians 4 and verse 31. Just giving you a sampling. We'll come back to these passages later. I want to give you a sampling of how the Bible does address the problem of bitterness. It must be a real problem. In Ephesians chapter 4, in the context of putting away the old man, he said, let all, here's our word, bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. He's writing to the church at Ephesus, and there must be some evidence in his mind that there were some who needed to take this concept of bitterness and put it away from them. Let's look at another passage. The Bible addresses the problem of bitterness. Colossians 3 and in verse 19, husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter toward them. The warning must be there is a possibility that we can be bitter toward our mates. That's possible. That's the warning. Here's another evidence that the Bible addresses. Hebrews 12 and in verse 15, look carefully or diligently lest anyone fall short of the grace of God. In other words, make sure you're doing what you ought to be doing and be very careful and very diligent lest any root of bitterness, interesting phrase, springing up, cause trouble and thereby become defiled. You see, bitterness could defile you and it can spring up. Called a root. Stick that in the back of your mind. Now, James 4 and verse 13 is another text that if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. That's in the context of the wisdom from God and the wisdom from Satan in contrast. It doesn't take a Solomon to figure out which one this one comes from. Bitter envy, he said, is really from Satan. It is not a part of the true wisdom. Now, since the Bible talks about bitterness, then I need to learn what the Bible says about it. I need to know some things about what God says and how to deal with that. I need to answer some questions about bitterness. First of all, what is bitterness? And furthermore, what about bitterness? What causes bitterness? Does the Bible give me any indication that this attitude or this action leads to bitterness? And it does. And what's the problem with having? What if I do find that I am full of bitterness in my heart? I'm eaten alive with bitterness. What's the big problem with? What's the big deal? Can't I just enjoy my bitterness? Or is there a danger of that? And furthermore, how do I get over it? If I say, you know, I recognize bitterness in my heart, what can I do to overcome that so that I'm no longer bitter? And furthermore, could it be that I'm guilty of that? Could I say, you know what, I don't think I'm a bitter person, and yet the qualities that describe bitterness are to describe me to the T. And so, let's talk for a little while this morning about bitterness. What does the Bible say about bitterness? It's a biblical term. The Bible addresses the problem. Here's the first thing we want to talk about is its meaning. Let's come to an understanding of what bitterness is, because it's very possible that I could be saying, you know what, I'm not bitter. I don't have any bitterness in my heart. And then you paint what bitterness is. Oh, yeah, I do that, but I'm not bitter. Well, let's describe what the Bible says bitterness really is. Those passages we just cited, like Ephesians 4:31, James 3:14, Hebrews 12. The word bitter comes from this lemma form of the Greek word, and the lemma form is pikria. You say, I don't know anything about that. Well, let's see what the authorities say pikria means. This is the root word that is translated bitter or bitterness. Let's see what it means. BDAG says, that's Art and Gingrich, Danker, says that it's a state of being bitter in an affective sense. Now, I want you to watch for key words here. Bitterness, here's one of the key words, animosity, anger and harshness. Think about animosity for a moment. Let's latch on to some key words here. So bitterness, BDAG says, means basically the idea of animosity. If I have animosity towards someone, and that brews, then I'm guilty of bitterness. Well, let's look at another. Swanson says it means bitter resentment. Key word, resentment. And so you say, am I guilty of bitterness? What? I'm not understanding what bitterness is. Bitterness has to do with resentment that you have, animosity that you have towards someone. Let's go again. Thayer says it means it. In Ephesians 3, he takes specific passages and says, here's what it means there. In Ephesians 3, 4:31, it has to do with bitter hatred. It has to do with bitterness of speech, Romans 3:14. We're coming back to Romans 3:14 more than one time. We'll talk about bitterness of speech. Let's go even further. Barclay. Now, Barclay is a commentator, but his primary focus is on the definition of words. He's a language man. And he said the Greeks defined this word as long-standing resentment. There's our key word again. Long-standing resentment. For example, this idea that maybe this idea of resentment, that somebody may do something or say something, you resent that, but then you get over that and you reconcile and everything's okay. You're not full of bitterness. This is long-standing resentment, the spirit which fuses to be reconciled. Do you think about that? There is a difference between two people and their animosity brews, one toward the other, or maybe each toward each other, two brothers in the Lord, two sisters in the Lord, or whatever the case may be. Their animosity and resentment brews to the point they try to reconcile, and somebody, maybe both of them, refuse to be reconciled. No matter what's said, no matter what's done, there is the refusal to ever work things out. That is bitterness, Barclay says. You're watching for the key words? Animosity, resentment, the refusal to be reconciled. Kittle says, originally this word, let's go back before it's used with reference to attitudes itself. The word originally had the idea of something pointed or sharp like an arrow. That point or that sharpness of that. It later came to have reference to a shrill of a noise. And then later something bitter or sharp to the taste. Kind of see the etymology of the word. And then apply to an attitude towards someone wherein there is some kind of disagreement. Now, let's go even further. I want to suggest to you that bitterness is hatred. It's not kin to hatred. It's not kind of similar to hatred. Has some similar qualities to hatred, but bitterness is hatred. How do I know? Well, animosity and resentment, those were key words I said for us to look at. The authorities say the idea of bitterness, pikria, means this animosity, it means resentment. Well, animosity and resentment means hatred. That is hatred. But let's now look at a passage. Let's turn to 1 John chapter 3 and in verse 15. 1 John, as we work through John on Sunday nights in the few weeks ahead, we're going to see in 1 John chapter 3 that one of the things John talks about is loving your brothers. We ought to love one another. And John approaches this idea that if there is something lacking in that love, we don't love them like we should, you may not literally despise that person, but lacking in love is defined as being hate. Let me give you evidence of that. Look at verse 14. We know that we have passed from death to life because we love the brethren. He who does not love his brother abides in death. What do you mean does not love his brother? Well, let's see. Next verse. Whoever hates his brother is a murderer. How does he use the word hate? He's using the word hate, and he's defined it for us in the previous verse as a lack of love. So if I'm not loving someone like I should, the biblical definition of that is hate. That's how it's used in Luke 10 and Matthew 14, or Matthew 10 and Luke 14, rather, in contrast to each other. Now let's go to Ephesians chapter 4 and in verse 3. I want you to see that it's closely related to some concepts having to do with hatred. Here is the passage in Ephesians chapter 4 that talked about putting off the old man. And notice he says at verse 31, let all bitterness, there's our word, but what else? There is wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking and malice be put away from among you. Well, one artist worded it, pictured it this way, that bitterness serves as the root that feeds the branches of clamor and wrath and anger and malice and slander. That anger and slander and malice is driven from this root attitude of bitterness, this animosity and this resentment. My point is that it is the same as that of hatred. Now understand what bitterness is. Let's come to an understanding of what causes that. Why is one bitter? So it may be that you're beginning to realize, you know what, I think I do have resentment and bitterness and animosity and the refusal to be reconciled. I've got that. But I don't know what caused it in my heart. Or you may know of someone that has the problem of bitterness and you say, I don't know what caused it in their hearts. Well, the Bible gives us some indication. Let's see what that is. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 3, if you will. And I want to suggest to you that it's immaturity that caused that. Now you will understand from your knowledge of 1 Corinthians that the Corinthians had harsh feelings toward one another, and they are described here in this text, 1 Corinthians chapter 3, as being immature. Notice beginning at verse 1, I could not speak to you as spiritual, but as unto carnals, as babes. In other words, as immature. I couldn't write to you like strong, mature Christians. I've had to write to you like you're immature, because that's what you are. I fed you with milk and not with solid food, for you're not able to bear it. Verse 3, for you're still carnal. What do you mean they're still carnal? Or babes or immature? For where there is envy and strife and division, that's harsh, hard feelings, resentment, animosity. That's what he's talking about. That's bitterness. And he says that's because you're babes. Now look at verse 4. For when one says, I'm of Paul, another one says, I'm of Apollos, are you not carnal? In other words, you're immature. His point is, the reason you have problems of harsh feelings toward one another is because you haven't grown like you should. You indeed are immature. Let's go to Matthew chapter 5. Jesus talks about loving even your enemy. We'll talk about that more in a moment. But Matthew chapter 5, beginning at verse 44. Love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those that hate you. And pray for those that despitefully use you and persecute you. Now that's in the context of saying this, that we ought to love even our enemies. Now notice now at verse 48, therefore be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. The word perfect there doesn't mean flawless, but it is the idea of completeness. In fact, your footnote or some translation may use the word not flawless, but complete. The idea of maturity. It is the idea of completion or mature. So if we love even our enemies, then that's when we become mature. That's when we're being the imitators indeed of God. Now a person who hasn't grown, is what I'm learning from this. A person that hasn't grown or developed spiritually is more likely to become bitter. And you say, I don't understand what causes people to do that. It's their lack of spiritual maturity. These passages just told me that. That as we grow and mature, you can't find someone that you say, you know what, he is a very mature Christian, but he's got his heart full of bitterness. That doesn't make sense. Let's go further. What causes it? The lack of wisdom. Let's turn to Proverbs, if you will. Turn to Proverbs 10. The lack of wisdom. Proverbs 10 and in verse 18. Whoever hides hatred has lying lips. One translation says he hides his hatred with lying lips. And whoever spreads slander is a fool. Now, if I know the word bitterness wasn't used there, but it described bitterness, hatred. We described that earlier. And so certainly any passage dealing with hatred deals with bitterness. This passage talks about hatred being connected with a fool. It means he's not using wisdom. He's foolish is the idea. It doesn't mean he's absolutely stupid. It means that he's foolish. He behaves in a foolish fashion. That's the point. Now let's turn to James chapter 3. James 3 is going to draw a contrast. Time would fail us to give a full discussion of James chapter 3. But beginning at verse 13, who is wise and understanding among you? Who is wise and understanding among you? What's his point? Well, let him show by his good conducts that his work are done in meekness of wisdom. In other words, you show you have wisdom by the way you behave yourself, by the way you act. That's his point. Now, let's notice down at verse 14. If you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, you do not boast and lie against the truth. In other words, there's wisdom from above and then there's wisdom from below. And so how do you show whether or not which wisdom you're using? By the way you behave yourself. That's his point. And his point here is that this bitter envy is not from the wisdom above, but it's from the wisdom that's below. And what I learned from that is a lack of wisdom is why this is taking place. Now I want to suggest that a person who doesn't seek or use wisdom is far more likely to become bitter. Now I can't imagine you going to some brother or sister and say, you know what, they're one of the wisest persons that I know in the kingdom. You want to go to somebody for good advice, go to this brother. They're one of the wisest people I know. Now the heart's full of bitterness. But I tell you what, they're some of the wisest people I know. That doesn't go hand in hand, does that? Why are people bitter? They're not using wisdom. Here's the third thing. Because of pride. Because of pride. Now let's turn to Acts chapter 3. You remember the case of Simon, the new convert, who tried to buy the Holy Spirit with money? And when Peter condemned him, he said, "You're in the gall of bitterness." Remember that? You're in the gall of bitterness. Now what did that have to do? What he's saying about his gall of bitterness. That's translated full of bitter jealousy. The New Century Version. Now that gives me some insight. What's driving him here? Simon looks at what the apostles are doing, the miracles they can perform, and he says, "I want that. I want that for me. I want it so bad, I'll give money for it. I'll give a lot of money for that." What's driving him to do that? Peter said, "You're in the gall of bitterness." We don't normally use that expression. How long has it been since one of the elders came to you and said, "I believe you're in the gall of bitterness"? Well, he hadn't used that word. But he might tell someone, "You're full of bitter jealousy," is what you are. We better understand what that means. He's full of bitter jealousy. In other words, what Simon is doing is only thinking about himself. He's envious. One lexicographer says of this verse that it means he's very envious. In other words, he doesn't just look at the apostles and say, "I'd like to have what they have. I just can't do that. But I want it, and I want it bad. How bad do you want it? I'm willing to give money. What would it take? I'll buy the Holy Spirit from you if I can." He's thinking only of himself. His bitterness is driven from pride. By asking for the miraculous gifts, it shows a desire for recognition. I want to be recognized like the apostles were. I've been the one getting attention before. Now they're getting all the attention. I want to be recognized. That pride drives bitterness. I want to suggest to you that when one is filled with pride, thinking only about themselves, they're more likely to become bitter. Here's another reason. Lacking in love. So how do you know? It's contrasted to love and being embittered. There's a contrast. Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter. It means if you're bitter, you don't love. If you love, you're not bitter. So whether it's a husband, whether it's a wife, whether it's the same principle of loving your brother, your sister, your neighbor, if you love the person, you're not bitter toward them. They're contrasted one with the other. Well, let's look at another principle. Love is the opposite of hate, isn't it? And so if I have a problem with hatred, it's because I'm lacking in the principle and deed of love. Now I want to suggest to you one who is bitter. And the person who is resentful doesn't know or doesn't practice the concept of love. Let's go to Ephesians 4. We're still talking about reasons. What causes it? Well, one of the causes is we've never put off the old man. We've never put off the old man. You see, bitterness is part of that old man. Go to Ephesians chapter 4. We've been there twice already. Go to Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31. What's the context of that? Back up to about verse 22. Therefore put off concerning your former conduct. That's the old man. That is, the way you used to live when you were worldly and godly, ungodly that is, and living like the world, that has to be put off and put away and put aside. And change your life is the idea when you become a Christian. Now look at verse 31. Bitterness is mentioned as being a part of the old man. Just like malice and guile, etc. Now, what I'm learning from that one who is bitter, a person whose heart's full of bitterness, has kept the old man alive and never put him off. They're living like the world. So you say, well, why is his heart full of bitterness? I'll tell you why his heart's full of bitterness. He's still trying to live like the world. Why is she so bitter toward everybody? It's because she's still trying to live like the world. That's a Bible answer to that. Now, here's another reason. What causes it? We're listening to the wrong source of guidance. Let's go back to James 3. Some of these passages we're beginning to repeat, and so we can hit them a little quicker because now we're understanding more about the context. Do you remember James chapter 3? The contrast with wisdom from above and the wisdom from below, and the wisdom from below involves bitter envy. Remember that? All right, that's the passage we're talking about. Wisdom from above doesn't point you toward bitterness. It doesn't point you toward bitterness. So you listen to the right source of wisdom, it's going to point you away from bitterness toward love and consideration. And so here's what I'm learning from that. That wisdom from the wrong source, we might not call it wisdom, it was called wisdom in James chapter 3, but wisdom from the wrong source very well may feed and stroke our anger and resentment and hatred. So some brother's done me wrong and I begin to resent him and I begin to build animosity and I begin to build some bitterness toward him. And I want some advice about this and I go to the wrong source of wisdom. And it may be I go to my friends of the world. And when I go to the friends of the world, they very well may stroke that anger. And they may feed that anger. And they may somehow build up that resentment so that now my resentment is even stronger because I went to the wrong source. I want to suggest to you that when people get advice from the world and listen to the wrong people, don't be surprised if the bitterness doesn't grow and get worse. That's part of the problem. So what causes it? There are a number of things. Immaturity, lack of wisdom, lack of love, pride, never putting off the old man, listening to the wrong source of guidance. Let's talk about the danger of bitterness. What is the danger of bitterness? In other words, can I just enjoy a little bit of bitterness? Because if you resent someone or have animosity towards someone you don't like, you probably enjoy a little bit of those thoughts. Can I just do that? What's the danger of that? Here's the first. It's not easily detected. It's not easily detected. Let's go to Hebrews 12. Hebrews 12 pictures it as a root, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you. As you well know, probably if you look at a marginal text, a marginal reference, that the Hebrew writer seems to be referring to and basically quoting from Deuteronomy 29 and 18. We'll come back to the concept of that, though we won't turn there. Lest any root of bitterness. Well, a root is something that's not seen on the surface, but we do see what it feeds. You see the tree, but you don't see the root. The root's feeding the tree. You see the plant, you don't see the root, but you see the plant and you see the fruit of that. And quite often we see the fruits of bitterness, but it's hard for us to see and identify the bitterness in our hearts or in somebody else's hearts. It's down here hidden below the surface. So it's called a root. That makes it hard to detect. Some suggest that Deuteronomy 29, Hebrews chapter 12, both may be referring, since one quotes the other, may be referring to a plant that grows among the good. Not just the root below the surface, but here you have a number of good plants, good trees, good bushes, or whatever the case may be, a good crop, and here is a poisonous plant that grows up in the middle of that. And because of all the good that you have, it's hard to see that bad plant right in the middle of that. It's hard to detect. Called a root of bitterness. Now, it may be, when we're talking about it being hard to detect, it may be that the wrong that's been done to me is so bad that I feel justified in harboring my resentment. You called me a bad name. You called me a liar when I wasn't one. You defamed my character. And that justifies my resentment in my mind. That's why it's hard to detect my bitterness. And so somebody, Brother Ray, why are you so bitter toward Brother so-and-so? Well, you don't know what was done to me. You don't know what he said to me. You don't know how I've been treated. And in my mind, that justifies. It's hard indeed to detect. I'm learning from that it's possible to be bitter and not see ourselves indeed as being bitter. What other danger is created by it? It stirs turmoil. Let's turn to Proverbs 10 and in verse 12. Proverbs 10 and in verse 12. Hatred, that's our word. I thought we were talking about bitterness. That's the same thing. Hatred stirs up strife. Bitterness stirs up strife. But love covers all sin. It creates turmoil. James 3, let's go back. Remember, this is the contrasting wisdoms. There's a point made in James 3 we haven't paid attention to yet. Notice he says, where there is envy, remember he called it bitter envy in verse 14, but where that is, that bitterness is, where there is envy and self-seeking, remember it's driven from selfishness. This is exactly what we're talking about. Where envy and self-seeking and confusion and every evil thing will be there. What's his point? You listen to the wrong wisdom from below and begin to practice those things. When you have bitterness and you have envy, then there's going to be confusion and every kind of evil thing. It creates turmoil, as the proverb writer said. Bitterness can cause us to make trouble out of something that we would tolerate in someone we like. I want that to sink in for a moment. Bitterness causes us to make trouble out of something that we would tolerate in somebody we like. You like this person and they say something and, oh, that's funny the way they said it. Somebody you're bitter toward, it ain't funny. In fact, it's offensive and you're going to clobber them for it. That's what bitterness does. It stirs up strife. It makes trouble out of something wherein trouble ought not be made. That's what the proverb writer is talking about. I love this cartoon. Here's two preachers sitting in a coffee shop, fussing about the churches where they are, and one says to the other, if you can't read the writing, why is it that a congregation that is still bitter about a 42-year-old misunderstanding can't remember last week's sermon topic? I can't remember what happened yesterday, but I can remember what you did to me 42 years ago. I guarantee it. That's the attitude. That's bitterness. Let's talk about the danger of it. It's not easily detected. It stirs turmoil. It causes us to say cutting words. How so? Let's turn to Romans 4, 3 rather. This is taken from Psalms. But I'm going to look at Romans. We made a passing reference. I said we'd come back, so here we go. Romans 3, 14. Talk about people who've gone astray, gone into sin. Notice what he says at verse 14, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. The mouth is full of cursing. The mouth reflects the bitterness. That's part of the fruit that comes out. The bitterness is the root, but it's manifested in what's said. That's the point of Romans 3. Hatred is said to be cruel, Proverbs 25 and verse 15. We're just going to make a passing reference to that. That hatred is cruel. The psalmist in Psalm 109 and in verse 3 talks about the words of hatred surrounded him. In other words, there were some very ugly things said to David. Some very cruel things said to David. He said they are words of hatred. In other words, words of bitterness is the point he's saying. Our bitterness is what drives those cutting and stinging words we let fly. And so When we are bitter towards someone, we let some cutting words go. What's driving that? What caused that? It's not the words that cause that. It's the bitterness that drives that. And that's what Psalm 109 is saying. What about its danger? Harboring bitterness. It robs you of your happiness. We're talking about happiness on Sunday morning in our Bible class. Bitterness makes you miserable. Have you ever seen a bitter person that, I mean, is just eaten alive with bitterness that says, you know what, I'm happy though. I'm happy as I can be. They're not happy, they're miserable. You've never seen a bitter person who is happy. Let's turn to Proverbs 15, if you will. And in verse 17. Solomon knew a great deal about the concept of bitterness and hatred. He'd seen a lot of it. And notice he said it in verse 17, better is a dinner of herbs where love is. What's a dinner of herbs? Very little. Better to sit down to a plate where you say, we don't have much to eat. We're poor. We don't have a fine feast. All we've got is some pieces of bread and bologna, and we don't have anything to put on that besides the bologna. And that's all we got. That's what we're going to eat tonight. That's it. And we've got water to drink. That's it. Better to have that, verse 17, and have love than to sit down to a fatted calf with hatred. Fatted calves suggest the idea of a feast. Which would you rather have? Do you rather live in a home where every night it's a feast? You've got servants preparing this feast and this great meal, and you come to the table and everybody's bickering and fighting. Or go to a church where everything's fine except everybody's bickering and fighting. Or would you rather be in poverty and have to get by on bologna and bread, and you say, we all love one another? Which would you rather have? Part of the danger, part of the problem. What else does it do? It destroys you. Lest any root of bitterness springing up and you are defiled. You'll be defiled by that. Bitterness becomes your master. You become enslaved. It controls you. Controls your actions, controls your thoughts, controls your words. Becomes your master. One writer said, it's not always what you eat that destroys you, but it's what eats at you. Bitterness is eating you. It's eating you alive. If your heart's full of bitterness, it's eating you alive. I love this quotation from Richard Nixon. The day he resigned, left office, he called his cabinet and staff together. And he gave a great speech, kind of rambling. Some wondered if he was losing his mind because he rambled so in his speech. But he had moments of brilliance in the speech. And he told his staff this. He said, others may hate you, but those who hate you don't win unless you hate them. And then you destroy yourself. You think about that. Others may hate you. They're never going to win the battle unless you hate them. And when you do, you've just destroyed yourself. Several writers have been taking credit for this phrase. The bitterness is like drinking poison and hoping that it'll hurt the other person. I've been done wrong, so I'm going to be bitter. That's like saying, you did me wrong, I'm going to drink poison. Watch this. I hope it hurts you. You're destroying yourself. You're destroying yourself. So what's the danger of it? It's not easily detected. It disturbs more problems. It robs you of your happiness. Causes cutting words. It destroys you. Now let's briefly talk about its sinfulness. That would be obvious. We've already established that point. But let's go back and consider this. That I know it's sinful because it's part of the old man. Remember that, Ephesians 1? We've talked about that a number of times. Part of the old man. So therefore I conclude it must be sinful. It's of the devil, James chapter 3. Therefore I know it's sinful, James 3. And it's part of hatred because it's in contrast to love. So therefore I know it's sinful. And on we could go establishing that point. We're commanded to put it away. The old man is to be put away. We're to put it away by the grace of God. Let's turn to Titus 3 just for a moment. Paul talks about himself. And what I'm wanting you to see is, as we're turning to Titus 3, that in Ephesians, I just want to remind you what Ephesians said, is that you're to put off the bitterness. You can put it away. That's the point.
Put off the bitterness. Put it away. Get rid of it.
But in Titus 3, Paul says concerning himself, when we once ourselves, I'm reading it verse 3, were foolish, disobedient. Well, how did you behave when you were foolish? Didn't have any wisdom, Paul. How did you behave? We were full of malice, envy, hating one another, and hateful and hating one another. That sounds like bitterness, doesn't it? My heart was full of bitterness. What happened to you, Paul? What happened to you? By the kindness, verse 4, the love of God, the mercy of God, verse 5, and verse 7, his grace, I was allowed to change. In other words, I used to be full of bitterness, but I put it away. Now, here's the conclusion I draw from that. If it is sinful and we're commanded to put it away, what I conclude from that is this. I can't please the Lord with bitterness. That's simple, but that's profound. That if this be true, what we're saying, and what these scriptures reveal, then I can't please the Lord and at the same time be bitter. Secondly, I can't go to heaven with bitterness in my heart. If I'm full of bitterness towards some brother, towards some sister, I can't go to heaven as long as I've got that bitterness. Here's another conclusion I have to draw from that. As deep as bitterness runs, like a root, like a taproot that goes down deep, and as long as it may last, the refusal to be reconciled. Barclay, remember that? It still can be put away because these passages say so. You say, you don't understand how deep-seated my bitterness is. I don't, but I tell you what, I do understand. The text says it can be put away. I read that and I understand that. It can be put away. Now, let's talk about its answer and its cure. What's the answer to the problem? What's the cure to the problem? And someone says, I come to recognize that I've got a problem with bitterness. What do I do about it? First of all, recognize it is sinful. We've just established that point. And what that means is I've got to change. All of these passages, this is not all that we noticed, but we noticed in Ephesians, Colossians, Hebrews 12, James chapter 3. And so first of all, I got to recognize this isn't right. This attitude is wrong. It is sinful. And because it is sinful, then I've got to change. I've got to change my attitude. Until I reach that point, they're never going to change. Secondly, pray. And pray and pray. Pray about what? Well, I might pray for strength to overcome. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Through the help of God, I can do anything God expects me to do. If God expects me to put this away, God expects me to overcome. If God expects me to develop a different attitude that's contrary to the one I have, I can do it. But I need to pray for strength. God, give me the strength. Grant me the strength to overcome. Pray for wisdom. If any lack wisdom, let him ask of God, James 1:5. God, help me to have the wisdom to see how this is to be done. Help me to have the wisdom to see what is the wise course and what's bad advice. Help me to see the wisdom of that. Pray for the person for whom you harbor bitterness. So that's hard to do. Sure it is. Go back to Matthew 5. This is the Sermon on the Mount. This is the elementary principles of being in the kingdom. And he said, I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those that despitefully use you. That's not my suggestion, that's the Lord's. And the person that you say, I don't really care for this, but I don't like them. I don't like the way they behave themselves. I don't like what they do. And I've developed resentment toward brother so-and-so, sister so-and-so, whoever that might be. I can't hardly stand to be around them. Matthew 5, pray for them. And you might find as you pray for them, and you pray as you ought to pray for them, that you begin to develop some care and concern for them. Third, try to understand the person you resent. Try to understand them. What do you mean? Philippians 2, 4. By the way, Philippians 2. There was friction at Philippi. There had to be. I know there was. You say, how do you know? I know there were two sisters that were singled out, Yodi and Syntyche. I don't know what their problem was, but I know Paul singled them out and said, y'all better get your act together. I don't know what it was, but they needed to resolve their differences. And left it to them to figure that out after some instruction in the text. Then the book talks a lot about unity. So I know there was some friction going on there. And in Philippians 2, in that context, look not every man upon his own things, but every man also upon the things of others. Don't just think about yourself, but think about other people. There must have been some problem at Philippi of some people being selfish and only thinking of themselves. That was Simon's problem. Remember that? He was in the gall of bitterness, eaten alive with jealousy. The golden rule, Matthew 7 and 12, as you would that men do, you do even so to them, for this was the law and the prophets. In other words, treat others the way you want to be treated. Treat them the way you want someone to treat you. You say, you know what, I deserve a little respect. What'd you say? You just said you deserve a little respect? Well, then show a little respect. Isn't that what Matthew 7, 12 says? Show a little. Here's another passage, 1 Corinthians 13, 7. Love believes all things. What does that mean? Love's gullible. Moffat translates that he gives the benefit of the doubt. Here's what love does. Love gives the benefit of the doubt. Try to understand them. Doesn't mean you agree with them. Understanding somebody doesn't mean you agree with them. The Bible reveals a great deal about Satan to us, how he operates. We need to know the wiles of the devil. 2 Corinthians or Ephesians 6. We need to know his schemes, how he operates. Understanding the devil doesn't mean I agree with him. I just want to know how he operates. I just want to know what he's thinking. I want to know what his plan is. I want to understand him so that I can better deal with him. Isn't that what Ephesians 6 is about? Go further. Finally, learn to love. Learn to love. Love is commanded and expected. In other words, God's looking at you and say, I expect you to love. And you say, God, it's hard. It's hard. It may be. There are some people hard to love. Let brotherly love continue, Hebrews 13 and verse 1. God says love is commanded and it's expected. In fact, listen to this. We've talked about this several times, and if you've missed it, catch it this time. That Matthew 5 says love even your enemies. And by the way, that's in a context saying it's not hard. I'm going to paraphrase the point. It's not very hard to love people that love you. Your friends. That's easy. Loving somebody that's your enemy. If that was real easy, there probably wouldn't be so much said about it. It's hard. So if I'm to love even my enemy, that means I can learn to love. Here's what love will do. I'm not going to take the time to develop 1 Corinthians 13. That's another study within itself. But love is kind, for example. Love doesn't seek its own. Love is not rude. Remember those expressions? Here's what love will do. Here's what I'm learning from this. Love can be learned. You say, I really am having a hard time loving brother so-and-so. He's just of such character. You know what? If the Bible tells you to love, you can learn to love them. You can learn to love them. That can be illustrated with marriage. The person you're married to, if you are married, and if you're not married, the person you will be married to, is not a person you've always known. So when you first meet, you don't automatically just love them. But you learn to get to know them and you learn to love them. You learn to love them. That's why you end up getting married. And so if you've learned to love somebody, you can learn to love other people. If you're no longer in love with someone, you can learn to love them again. If you don't love your brother and you say, I used to, but I just hate him now. Well, then you can learn to love him again. That's what I'm saying. So what is the answer? Realize it's sinful and say, I've got to change. Pray about yourself and about the other person. Try to understand the person you resent and then learn to love. Nobody said that would be easy. but learn to love. Bitterness. We tried to see its meaning, its cause, its danger, its sinfulness, its answer, and its cure. May God help us to identify bitterness in our hearts and put that out of our lives, that we might be the people God would have us to be. There may be one or more present who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Would you come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge your faith, and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're subject in any way, would you come while together we stand and while we sing?